I'm joined by Wael Asiyah, who's Edinburgh-born Emirati writer, intercultural intelligence trainer and a sports enthusiast. He joins every Tuesday. We've just been going through the Arabic newspapers, and we're going to move on a little bit now to talking more about Ramadan and this holy month. Inshallah. A very good afternoon to you, Wael.
Afternoon.
Now, I'd like to now welcome Cynthia Gonzalez, who is a human relations coach and trainer in emotional intelligence. She's also a non-Muslim, but has chosen to observe Ramadan and fast for the last 18 years. She's currently working on a book due to come out in the spring of 2013 on Arab-West relations from an emotional intelligence point of view, and it really is a pleasure to be joined by her here in the studio. Cynthia, welcome.
Hi, Siobhan. Hi, Wael.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Real honour to be here. Thank you.
Well, we're going to sort of talk more so in this hour really about Ramadan and how people observe Ramadan predominantly through their way of fasting. As you mentioned, you are a non-Muslim. You've chosen to do so for the past 18 years. So it'll be wonderful to hear your story. And of course, then reflect on Wael's reasons and experiences and etc. preparations for Ramadan as well, and I'd really love for you to share that with us too. So, but let's start with Cynthia. 18 years. I think even Wael was really, really like, wow, really impressed
years,
by that.
Mashallah.
Thank you. Yeah, it started for me in the early 90s. I was living in Paris, and I had a lot of Moroccan and Tunisian and Algerian friends and clients as well. And I observed a friend of mine at the time. His mother had come to visit from Morocco and was observing Ramadan. She stayed the whole period of Ramadan and then flew back to Casablanca the night before Eid. And through that whole month, I watched her transformation. And it was the first time I observed someone observing Ramadan close up like that. And it was, you know, over the days I would see her and I would see the progressive changes. And I thought, God, I want to do the same. And so the next year, I had all these very dear Moroccan friends. The next year, I asked them if I could come and visit them during Ramadan and that I would want to participate. So I did. And I was very amazed. Now, I'd had a background already of cultural anthropology and psychology. And so I was witnessing something that was universal to so many faiths and spiritual practices. And I was watching it before my eyes, but I saw something that wasn't just a small little tribe, or it was the awareness of what they were doing for Muslims across the world. And there are approximately 1.5 billion Muslims on our planet now. And the awareness that all these people are doing this very rigorous practice. And so I became very, very intrigued. So I observed that, and so then I stayed in Morocco for a couple of weeks, and then I flew back to Paris, and I decided to continue to take it through all the way. And as I was sitting in my apartment, and it was a wintry day at that time when Ramadan was, I was really cold, and I was, you know, the last 2 hours before breaking fast, and then all of a sudden I just had this kind of knowing that kind of came over me, and it was this awareness that I, as an American citizen, had an opportunity to offer a counterpoint to an understanding and an experience of the Muslim people and the Muslim faith and the Arab culture in a way that I felt very necessary at the time. The Gulf War had just ended, the first Gulf War, just a couple years prior. There had been a lot of Algerian terrorist bombings in the city of Paris, and there were an enormous amount of anti-Arab sentiment starting to increase in a way that we've only seen accelerating, and then, of course, September 11th and everything that came after that. And I felt this kind of, this calling, if you will, to offer an empathetic understanding of Muslims in a way that could only take me there by the experience. And I knew that my path, and I've known it ever since, that my path wasn't to convert to Islam, but I knew that this particular spiritual practice was going to be something that every month would take me down into that empathetic understanding like nothing else, that was also coherent for who I really was, that I wouldn't be compromising myself, and at the same time, offer an understanding.
It's a fabulous story, a really interesting story, and of course that has continued, as we've mentioned earlier, for for the last 18 years and, of course, to today. Now, I'm just wondering, you know, you mentioned religion and obviously it is part of the faith of Islam. Was there any religious aspect at all to your fasting, or was it really just more of an empathy with the
very
people
good.
Themselves?
That's a great question. Mm. Very much so. I've been, you know, when people ask me, what religion are you? I was raised Christian. I was raised Catholic as a child, and then veered away from that in my adolescence and was attracted more to other spiritual practices. I became a practicing adept of yoga. I started meditating regularly. I became then what I now today, you know, lightly call myself a universalist. I'm more of a spiritual person than a religious person. And so for me, very much so. So up prior to starting to observe Ramadan, I had been a regular meditator. So when I would observe Ramadan, I found my meditations took on a completely different quality. I was able to meditate longer. I wouldn't move around. I wouldn't be fidgety over the time. And my practices, whether it be yoga or any other movement that I can do, some here it's swimming. I mean, it used to be dance. Different things that take me into my center, really, or take me into a kind of a closer connection to a spiritual source. And during Ramadan, that is very much, and that's how I sustain it. I mean, and especially so when it's very cold or very hot.
Yeah.
It's there's nothing else. Mm-hmm. It's necessary.
I think what's interesting is from my, I suppose, listening to your stories, and actually, well, having lived in Dubai for many, many years and never experienced actually having done fast the whole month anyway myself, but have many friends who do, it's always about the food. It's about the water. And that is the first thing that you hear about. Oh, gosh, how can you not eat or drink for a month? How do you do it? And then it's about the breaking of fast and the food that you eat. And for me, I mean, this is just, you know, I said just my observations about it very, you know, in limited way. But it's always about food. That is sort of the cornerstone of what Ramadan to me seems to have either become or not. And I know, while you know, it's not for you, and it certainly doesn't seem to be for you, Cynthia.
Largely because I recognize the food aspect to be just a shadow. I think we're going to be talking about addictions coming in. But when you start thinking of it logically, you're not eating, you're not drinking, especially the drinking kicks off really quick with a lot of people. But there comes a point, first of all, a lot of Muslims in particular, are gradually brought into this. So they're reared up from a very young age. So psychologically, it's not a barrier as much.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a point where, whether you're a Muslim or whether you're not, whether you're fasting in Ramadan or whether it's outside of Ramadan, there's a point when every single logical, physical aspect of it goes. And we're in the 16th day. And for me, I've gotten to a point where I crave it. Cynthia said something about getting to be taken to the center. Once you're in that center, you crave it. And you become addicted almost to it, because it's in that center. And the
you crave what?
You crave, the lack of gets you there.
You crave going to your center.
That's it. And it's the fasting that propels it.
Which is the
without. So whenever I'm talking to people and they keep on mentioning food, Ramadan about food, that's a very, very surface level part. And the thing about fasting is a physical thing. You won't know what your center is until it's very trippy. I mean, that's the only word I can use that comes to mind. It is a very trippy experience.
And can I say something about that?
Please.
And just because that comes in with my background with some cultural anthropology. It's what we call a non-ordinary state of consciousness. And when we fast, it's like chanting, it's like trance dance, it's all of these things that put us into an alpha state and sometimes even a theta state in terms of brain waves. When we fast, we inevitably will go into an alpha state. And that alpha state, when you look at In terms of, you know, there was a great film a long time ago with William Hurt called Altered States, and it was the whole film was him trying to always get into altered states. But it's exactly what you're saying. It's that craving, like, take me into that altered state, which is really the state of consciousness that where our access to our higher self or our wiser self is so fluid. That access point is incredibly fluid.
Mm.
And that's open to everyone. That's not a Muslim thing.
Exactly.
I often say, when we congratulate one another in Ramadan, what do we say? We say Ramadan Kareem.
Mm-hmm.
And Kareem translates into generous. When somebody is Kareem, they're generous, they're giving. Ramadan, whether it's the stars and moon aligned at a particular phase, it has something to give. And so mm-hmm. long as you have the space within you to take, then you're going to get a lot.
Right.
But if you're literally bloated up, blocked up, whether with information, food, emotions, how can anything get to you?
Mm-hmm.
That's when people will go, oh, but it's this water, I can't handle the water. And you'll even get a lot of Muslim people who should be fasting. But for me, with how they're driving, with how they just spoken to the person, that's just they're walking across the room, and they're like, "Why do you have to walk so loud?" What do you mean, walk so loud? It's got nothing to do with that.
No.
But it's people that mistake the surface for the for the deeper stuff.
It's interesting, again, going back to, I'm sort of playing a little bit of devil's advocate and sort of saying, you know, these are some of the negative things that you do hear and see, unfortunately, about Ramadan. One of them, as we mentioned, is the food. The other one is sort of the filling of time, mm-hmm. You know, and everything, and some of the soap operas, as you mentioned, and lots of other stuff, and it's just sleeping, maybe, mm-hmm. and it's just, what do I do with all this time mm-hmm. I have on my hands? And when you have time on your hands, you start thinking.
Mm-hmm.
When you start
mm-hmm.
thinking, your mind starts racing, and it's, you know, and that's mm-hmm. when I can imagine the agitation mm-hmm. and the frustration mm-hmm. actually starts.
I have a lot to say about that. Like I said, the first time I went to Morocco, I was so amazed, because I had been going to Morocco for a few years and knew all these people. And these are people that they're not very, what we would call, very practicing Muslims. They're you often see this in kind of Muslims. You see the very practicing ones, and you see those that identify themselves as Muslims and are born into the faith, but they pretty much only practice, you know, during Ramadan. The rest of the year, you know, they're not necessarily praying, or they drink alcohol or whatever. This was that kind of a group, and, you know, very feisty, you know, jubilant type of group of people. And during Ramadan, here they were, no alcohol, you know, dropping the cigarettes during the day. And it was amazing to see how that they were obliged to have to start facing themselves emotionally. And this is the thing, and for myself, because I have, I mean, this is my career, this is my path, I make it, it's my life to do spiritual practices. I mean, that's something that you could kind of call me in some kinds of times an urban nun. I mean, that is my thing. I make that a way of life, but not everybody does. And yet they are on this, you know, called to the spiritual practice, or are in part of the religion. So what do they do? And that's where it opens us to the discussion on addiction. When there is material that's coming up inside, an addiction is when we escape those feelings and go to something else, whether it's an activity, whether it's a substance, mm-hmm. whatever. And so a lot of people do not have the tools emotionally how to handle that material, those niggling different feelings of angst or resentments or whatever it is, as it's coming up, they don't know what to do with it, so they will fill the time. And so each person, and see, that's the beauty I find with Ramadan, is that over the years of someone practicing it over and over every year, it's a continuous opportunity to refine. You know, every year may not be the best way of observing Ramadan. Other years will give you more of that opportunity. So it comes down to this emotional challenge.